It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. A very special night, a very special evening. Our look at ECU versus UCF, but we've got more to talk about than just the preview. But first, let's bring in the usual suspects. We have with us Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
Going on, David. Good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. We love having you here. And also, the other usual suspect, and that's Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Not much. Just got home from my son's baseball game, and it's good to be with you guys. Looking forward to talking about the Pirates.
All right. The Slugger Riley, congratulations to him. I know he knocked about four or five home runs tonight, so good for him. And we have a very special guest co-host tonight with us, Dr. John Bream. What's up, man?
Not too much, man. Thanks for having me back on the podcast.
Absolutely. You drive up the numbers. You push the needles go way over, and that's what we like. So nothing like controversy, or that's what we strive to do here, is to make a lot of people mad, and Kyle would say piss people off. But that's what we're just now.
That's right. That's the goal of the podcast. Piss people off.
Yeah. No.
What we want to do is get people talking and thinking.
I know. I said that to get the reaction out of you. Yeah. Anyway, we had a, obviously we're going to talk the preview, but we can multitask because my understanding, we have a breaking story right before we record the podcast. So that's why we want to have Dr. John Bream on. And I was saying, actually, if you can bream me up, catch me up to speed, Dr. Bream, on what's going on with the chancellor and wanting to charge the students $75 to fund athletics.
Yeah, so basically, the chancellor and Lee Workman presented a plan today that was covered by WITN at 6 o'clock tonight that they want to add an additional $75 to the athletics fee to help cover the athletics deficits, which that's a pretty tough pill to swallow, in my opinion, that, it's not the students' fault that that the budget is having trouble. And, the students, their athletic fee was already increased $145 between fiscal year 2012 and 13 and 2016 and 17, there's a stepwise increase in the athletic fee. And so now if you add this onto it, that's, $220 new athletic fee increase in, about 6 or 7 years. And that's just, I don't think that hardworking parents are sending their kids to school and, realizing that they're paying, all this money in athletic fees to really solve our budget deficits have been created generally by mismanagement.
Well, let me ask you this, John, while we bring that up. Extra $75, if you say 29.5, it's over 29,000 students. That would put you a little over 2.2 million. And aren't we, the projections were, as of the new fiscal year, aren't we about $3 million in the hole?
Roughly, yeah, about, it was closer to 4 million, but, when Staten, talks about different, buckets or colors of money, they basically went to basically a fund from academics and swiped the money away to balance the budget, basically. So they used, some excess revenue from academics to pay off that debt already. So we're sort of, budget neutral right now, although I think a lot of people would be upset that, we're borrowing money away from academics to do it.
I am, but I'm not, and I'll tell you why. I agree with you 1,000% on that, but have you seen, I could start a conspiracy right now, have you seen the difference between academics? Drive down 10th Street, look at the difference between academics and athletics. It's not even close. It's not even close. The buildings, not that I want it to be bad for academics, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying they should be hand in hand. And we're way far behind academics at our school when it comes to athletics.
Yeah, that's where, I think where it comes in that, the state can obviously kick in money for those buildings and for academics,
right,
and whatnot, and we can't you know, the state can't kick in money to athletics, like, you know, or, you know, I think that's the commonly cited theme by, you know, the Board of Trustees and the Chancellor and everybody, that they were at this huge disadvantage because, you know, we start out $17 million behind. And, I mean, I get that, and that's all well and good, but, you know, we were all this money behind, too, you know, when we were, you know, starting out the American Athletic Conference and winning games. You know, nobody was crying foul about all this when, you know, we were, you know, winning conference championships in CUSA.
Correct.
And beating these teams a few years ago.
Yeah, and that's just it. That's just it. People want to make excuses and say, well, we need funding here. You know, the state can't help us, like, you know, Connecticut can help UConn
with Florida
athletic budget and UCF or whatever. But here's the thing. If that's the case, then we need to work harder. We need to be more creative. We need to have an athletic director leading the way to inspire people to give more. We don't have an AD. Our chancellor is you know, clueless when it comes to Division I athletics. So if the excuse is we can't get money from the state to help fund athletics like some of the other schools in our conference can, then we need to be doing other things to offset the difference.
Well, here's,
and we're doing
exactly,
we're doing the opposite of that. We're not doing anything. What we're doing now is asking students, like John said earlier, we're asking students to foot part of the bill of the deficit that's been caused by mismanagement by Cecil Staton, by Jeff Comper, by you know, going all the way back to Steve Ballard for allowing people to run Terry Holland away.
And you know, we have and here's another point to make. The bottom line is, as Dave Hart has mentioned many times, we've got to fix football. And football is what drives the train. It stirs the drink. You've heard all the analogies and this and that. But here's the thing. When football, it's like when the wife, if the wife ain't happy, nobody's happy. Well, when football is, when we're losing, it affects everything. That's why, like, with when people say we need to cut sports and all that, if football is winning 8, 9, maybe let's say we have a miracle season, 2013, we had 10 wins, nobody's talking about Olympic sports. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And I do, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, they may not be talking about Olympic sports, but, you know, we are talking about, you know, football, you know, men's basketball, which we've, you know, finally made a commitment to.
Right.
You know, obviously talking about baseball.
Right.
To a lesser extent, you know, women's basketball has made some noise in the past couple of years and made the NIT and NCAA tournament. So, I mean, you know, I agree we can't, you know, blow off, you know, there's not nearly as much buzz, and I know football drives the train, and, you know, you guys are exactly right. You know, we got to get football right first, and that's kind of where it, you know, that's where it all begins and ends. And, you know, Dave Hart, you know, I find it interesting that during the game, you know, Ronnie Woodward publishes an article in the Reflector talking about there's really no time, there's no rush to hire an AD still and all this good stuff, which is just crazy to me. And I don't know, it's just a tough situation really to fathom where we're at right now, and just how we got into this and how we're going to get out of it. You know, Dave Hart, you know, said, you know, in the pregame that, you know, he's not, you know, judging personnel. There's, you know, 40,000 people who are doing that for him. And, you know, I think it's pretty easy to see by Saturday night's crowd what those 40,000 people want.
Well, then, you know, I'm glad Hart said that, and I hope that is a telling statement that he's going to give us what we want at the end of the season if the path continues.
That's
on
its own. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, but they've made it very clear.
I just want to make this one quick point, I promise. They made it clear about what they're saying. I'm talking about Cecil Staton and Dave Hart. They're going to wait. They're going to let the season play out. End of November, he's going to be fired. Unless there's a miracle winning every single game coming up for the second half of the year, or most of them. And that's going to happen. So the question is, basically what it comes down to is Dave Hart will make the recommendation to fire Scotty Montgomery unless we turn things around coming up in November. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and we've got – the thing is, you know, we've got some – sorry, Kyle. You know, we've got some winnable games coming up. I mean, Tulane
really. –
I mean, maybe, Kyle. I mean, UConn's a winnable game.
Well, UConn, sure. Yeah, UConn, yeah.
I mean, UConn's a winnable game. You know, Temple – or not – God, no, not Temple. Tulane may be a winnable game, but, you know, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, those are, you know, I guess legitimate shots, you know.
Oh, that's the worst thing you want. You do not want full wins with wins over UConn and Tulane where there's a chance they're going to keep this clown with wins over UConn and Tulane in a four-win season. Jesus, H, tap, death, and Christ on a popsicle stick. Please, no. Either get to six wins or at least five or get some impressive wins. If you're going to beat NC State, if you beat UConn and Tulane, and you're questioning, oh, well, we won two out of our last four or five, and four is more than three. Oh, my God. That, if they were to keep him with four wins, holy crap.
And you know what? And you know what? And you know what?
What's that, Tony? We lost to A&T. That's what I know. We lost to A&T.
That he should have fired him then. We should have fired him then. Here's the Dave Hart stuff and firing Montgomery. You know, it's probably going to happen, but here's my question. Dave Hart, I don't believe Dave Hart's going to take the job as athletic director. We're not going to have an AD. So what is the pool of candidates going to look like that's going to want the job without an athletic director? They're going to want to know who their boss is. I think right now, with the disaster Montgomery's been and being in the American Athletic Conference, coaches want to take a job. When Ruffin was fired, nobody wanted to touch this thing. Right now would be a great chance if we had an AD. I think a lot of people would want this job. But without an AD, I think it's going to limit our pool of candidates. Now, I still think there will be plenty of good candidates if you're creative with your hire. But there's going to be some guys like – you know, that I think a Bill Clark, for example, would be a candidate, that's because of UAB, if we had an AD, whereas now I don't see that. Mike Houston at JMU, how interested will he be if we don't have an AD? Maybe he'll be interested, maybe not. Now, there's some other good candidates. The head coach at Elon, I know he would jump at the opportunity, no matter, you know, if David was the AD. It wouldn't matter. You know, because just what he makes. But
right. Kurt Cignetti,
yes. You know, somebody else that I think is we need to look at that doesn't have any coach experience that I know for a fact wants the job is Shane Beamer. And Shane's at Oklahoma right now with Lincoln Riley and Ruffin. And so he knows ECU. He'll bring back that air raid offense. He knows the area from being at Virginia Tech for years. So he's a guy that I know would take the job. So, you know, what do y'all think? John, we'll let you go first as your guest. How do you think the hiring process would go without having a true AD?
I just don't see how it goes. I mean, I guess, you know, Dave, I think the ideal situation is that Dave kind of starts this committee, this AD, it serves on the AD search committee, and really steers the process, because I think, you know, Dave certainly has the knowledge to do this. That, you know, certainly, you know, I think one interesting thing to note that despite, you know, Dave's fairly long career, he's hired two football coaches. I mean, he's, you know, it's actually fairly interesting for someone whose athletics career spanned, what, 30 years. I mean, he really, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think he hired Logan, right?
He hired Logan,
and then he hired Tennessee.
Bush Jones.
Yeah, I think that's.
Who hired Bill Lewis?
That was actually Dave Hart as well, yeah.
Okay, so you hired Bill Lewis, Steve Logan, and Bush Jones. Well, those were three pretty good hires. And Tennessee fans may argue Bush Jones wasn't a good hire, but.
He was a good hire that Tennessee fans didn't give him a chance.
Did he hire Dirk Dooley at Tennessee also?
Yes, I think I have to look at that. I think so.
I'm not sure about that. That may have been when he was still.
Yeah, it was right before him.
When he was still at Alabama.
As assistant at Alabama. Okay. I'm with you, John. Dave Hart will most likely lead the search. But the thing is, unless Dave's going to take the job as AD, the question that I'm going to ask is, if I'm being interviewed for the job, well, who's my boss going to be? So if I'm Mike Houston, I'm going to use Mike Houston, for example, because I think that's the guy that everybody wants. If I'm Mike Houston, I say, yeah, I'll take the job. I like what you're offering me in terms of pay, but I don't know who my boss is going to be. So what I'm going to want is a really lucrative buyout. That if you fire me, if that new AD comes in and he gets wild hair up his ass, he just wants to hire his own coach, and you fire me within my first 3 years, you have to pay me my full contract, not a portion thereof. You have to pay me my full contract with incentives. If I'm a head coach and I'm taking a job without knowing who my boss is going to be.
I like the idea of that a lot, because we want him here, right? We want him to be here for a long time.
Houston? Yeah, Mike. Yeah. If we can get somebody like that, yeah, I'd have no problem with a deal like that.
The reason being is, you got a guy that can win. I swear, I've said it before, I'll say it publicly. Mike Houston can get you 9 or 10 wins every year. You can write that down. That it doesn't take a genius to figure that out. Look at his resume. He can get us 9 or 10 wins a year.
I think we'd be a consistent 8 to 9 win team. John, was it you? And if it wasn't you, or if it's not something that you want to divulge the source, somebody said something about Butch Davis. Was that you, or was that somebody else?
No, that was somebody else.
Okay. Do you remember who their source was, or can we not talk about that?
I don't really know. Honestly, I'll ask you that question. I don't really know.
Okay. All right. So moving on from there. somebody mentioned Butch Davis, and it wasn't John. I thought it was John, but
Butch Jones.
Butch Davis.
Okay.
Not Butch Jones. That'd be interesting to see if Butch Jones was a candidate with his ties to Dave Hart. How would y'all feel about Butch Jones if he was Moe's replacement?
Hire him tomorrow.
You like Butch Jones?
Yeah, he got with Tennessee, was what, a couple of 9-win seasons in a row. I mean, how great. Well, he knocked off Auburn, you know, this week, and they looked really good. I mean,
before that, did a hell of a job at Tennessee and Central. Excuse me. Before that, did a hell of a job at Cincinnati and Central Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd be a great hire.
Yeah, Bubba,
I don't have a problem.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with Butch Jones. No, like you said, he's a proven head coach. He'd be a heck of a lot better hire, much more proven than what our current situation is.
I mean, heck, as long as his name's not John Thompson, I think I could get behind anybody as the head coach at ECU.
Shane Beamer, that Kyle talked about, I agree with him on that. We need to have a proven head coach, because it doesn't matter to me if they're FCS, if they have a great record, a great track record and a resume, or if they're FBS and, you know, want to come there, come to East Carolina. Let's take a look at it. So I think there's a ton of quality candidates. Kyle, I am like you with being nervous about would we lose the quality of the head coaches? Would it narrow the pool down? But I think ultimately you're right, though. If we want a head coach and we don't have an athletic director right now, we've got to give them more of a, like the NFL players, more guaranteed money, right?
You got to give them more incentives to take the job, yeah.
Right.
Maybe not more paycheck, maybe, you know, the $1 million to $1.5 million is about what we're
right.
What we're going to do. But you got to give them more incentive, you know, more security, where, you know, hey, look, your buyout's going to be this, as opposed to,
right.
You know, normally right now our buyouts for our coaches are pretty cheap. You may have to give them a bigger buyout to take the job,
right?
Without a true AD. As far as what you're talking about, having a proven head coach, that would be idea. Whether it's an FCS head coach, a former FBS head coach like a Butch
right.
Jones, like a Rich Rodriguez,
Butch Davis.
Butch Davis, you know, he's a setting. He, you know, he, right now he's at FIU, so we'd be hiring him away. He's got a job. Well, if you're going to hire somebody that's, you know, I mentioned Shane Beamer. There are other guys that aren't head coaches that you got to be smart if you're going to do that. To me, something else about Shane Beamer, and I'm not endorsing Shane Beamer fully. I think Shane Beamer would heal some wounds too, because there's going to be a group of people that are going to get behind him because he's going to remind them of Skip Holtz because of being the son of a head coach,
right?
And because of his relationship with Russell McNeil and Lincoln Riley, they would probably give him a rousing endorsement. And I think that would heal some wounds to some people that are really still upset about Ruffin being fired.
Yeah, couldn't you see, Shane Beamer leaving Oklahoma, coming here, Ruffin McNeil, filming a little video clip, Pirate Nation, we need you to get behind you, Shane Beamer,
Exactly.
Pirate Nation going crazy, everybody will show on support him. Season tickets will go up. Pirate Club donations would go up, and then, we wouldn't have to beg the students to pony up the deficit.
Exactly.
And that's right. And what we need is, when we talk about cutting sports or whatever they're saying, the bottom line is we need money to come in. We need the revenue. And the way that you get the revenue, as you guys were stating, is you bring in the great head coach. And I think Beamer would be a sexy hire. I think that that's something that, although I want a proven head coach, I think that is something is common sense. What makes sense? He would be a perfect fit for East Carolina. And I think there's some coaches that may not necessarily be a perfect fit for East Carolina. I got a name I'm going to throw out there at you. We've talked about it off the air for podcasting. I'm going to throw this one to John. I don't know if he would do it. What do you guys think about Scott Satterfield from Appalachian State?
That's coaching going anywhere. I mean, if he's going anywhere, he's going to the show. I mean, he's going to a higher profile job. I mean, App's just crushing it. I mean, every sense of the word. I mean, App is killing it in the Sun Belt. They've still gotten some big wins. I mean, God, their AD. I mean, God, they got Miami to come there and play. I mean, they're just. App is,
how about if we get a package deal of we'll take the AD and their football coach?
A couple interesting notes about Scott Satterfield, though. Scott Satterfield's making $650,000 a year at App State.
Yeah.
That's basically half of what we're paying Scotty Montgomery. And also, he was a student at ECU prior to walking on at Appalachian State. So there's a couple of interesting notes on Satterfield, though he is from Hillsboro, wouldn't be surprised if North Carolina doesn't throw a lot of money at Scott Satterfield.
Well,
yeah, they're going to be looking for a new coach.
Yes.
From what I'm hearing in Chapel Hill is they want Les Miles, by the way, John.
Yeah, I did read that. Yeah, that would be, Les is the sexy name, but I mean Satterfield's probably the better hire.
I agree.
Yeah,
I think Satterfield's probably the better fit than Les Miles. They can hire their own coach. I'm not worried about that. What do you guys think? And then we'll get into the UCF game here in a minute. Bubba, feel free to chime in, brother.
he fell asleep. It's okay. You all right, Bubba?
I'm good.
Can I throw out a name at you guys?
Yeah, maybe it's going to be the same name I was about to throw out. Go ahead.
Oh, you go first.
No, go ahead, John.
How about the old the coach? Would we go the route of disgraced coaches who need to get back into coaching?
Which one are you referring to?
Was it his name? Was it Houston Nutt that got brought down at Ole Miss?
Oh, no,
Hugh Freeze.
Hugh Freeze.
Hugh Freeze, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Hugh Freeze got brought down let's be real. He got brought down for having sex with an escort. And he was stupid enough not to have a burner phone, and it was on the school phone. It ain't like he murdered somebody. It ain't like he was cheating. Although there was some allegations of some recruiting violations going on at Ole Miss, But what got him brought down was an escort. So it's to me, that's a forgivable offense. I would look at you, Freeze. But I'll tell you one that at Arizona, Rich Rodriguez got fired. Mm-hmm. And Rich was accused by a young lady of
sexual assault.
And Rich Rodriguez came out and made the statement that it wasn't a sexual assault. I had an affair with her. And just came out and said it and put it out there. And the woman, I think, was basically, I'm not sure. I don't think the case went anywhere, basically. So I think Rich was telling the truth. So I think Rich has been cleared of.
Yeah, but you can't, not in the political climate currently, not with everything at the Supreme Court we just went through and all that.
But he's been cleared.
That's not going to happen right now.
He's been cleared. That's all a different discussion for a whole other time. And I'm not just like pissing people off.
So how about the UCF game?
You start the preview off with Jason Beatty, and we'll get the UCF Knights, their perspective. He's actually, Jason's with the Knights 24/7 Sports, and let's go to him, Jason, right now.
We're doing our UCF ECU preview, and with us now from the Knights 24/7 Sports, and that's Jason Beatty. Jason, man, thank you so much for coming back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely. I was listening to our interview we did, our preview, and things are looking so good for the Knights so far. So good, I guess, will be the theme this year for UCF.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we started the season, we knew there was a chance they could keep winning games. And, unfortunately, the UNC game was canceled because of Hurricane Florence. That was one big loss of the schedule. They handled Georgia Tech. And they just escaped Memphis this past weekend on the road. So things are definitely looking up in favor of UCF winning out.
No doubt about it. In fact, you always hear that cliche. As long as I've been living, I've heard the cliche, good teams find a way to win. Is that what you feel like with Memphis, against Memphis this past week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, I don't know exactly if I ever felt like they were going to lose the game entering the game, but when they were down 16 points at halftime, I mean, if you told me at halftime the defense was going to shut out the Memphis in the second half, I wouldn't have believed you. I knew the offense was going to put up some points and have a better second half, but I didn't think the defense could have gotten it done. Even down, I mean, there was Memphis had a minute 38 left or a minute and a half left to go down and score a field goal, and they just somehow found a way. I mean, that's what, after the game, Mackenzie Milton said championship teams have to win games like this to find a way, like you said, and somehow they did.
It's kind of like the tournament adage, survive in advance, and they survive in advance. And if you think about the regular season, I think there's a much bigger goal this year for UCF. I want to get your feelings on Bubba, myself, and Kyle. We thought you guys would be coming in at least number 7 in the country. Do you think there's a bias against, because UCF, East Carolina, there's a lot of teams in America, they're non-Power 5 plus, they don't have a brand name like Michigan or Penn State or Alabama?
You know, I figured there would be a ceiling in the rankings at one point. I didn't think it would be 10 for right now. I think for me personally, if they move up to 9, I think that'd be fine. I think 9 to 10 is fine because you still got to remember they gave up over 100 yards on penalties. And don't get me wrong, Memphis is a very good team, but I really think 9 to 10 is a good ranking for UCF right now. The problem that I have is the other teams jumping UCF in the rankings. Oklahoma lost their last game they played, and they had a bye week, and they jumped UCF. That, to me, just doesn't make sense. I mean, the AP ballot, the AP poll itself is sometimes you get voters. I mean, Auburn and South Carolina are still receiving votes in the AP poll. a 4-3 Auburn and a 3-3 South Carolina. That to me just that kind of just messes up the rest of the rankings for me. I mean, there was an AP ballot that had UCF at 24 behind two lost teams. So absolutely there's a bias. You cannot be an AP voter and tell me there's no bias against UCF. You know, Notre Dame survived Pitt. UCF blew out Pitt. They dominated Pitt at home. You know, Michigan dominated SMU, I think, 2 weeks ago or a couple weeks ago, and so did UCF. So, you know, it's hard to compare programs, but when you have a common opponent like Pitt, like SMU, even Memphis, you have to do that. And that's right now there's a clear bias in the AP ballot against UCF, in the AP poll against UCF. I'll be interested to see where the playoff committee starts UCF at. I don't think it'll be 10. Like, I would be absolutely shocked if the first committee rankings released and UCF starts at 10. Because right now they're climbing a tall mountain. For them to start at 10 in the committee rankings would surprise me. I think they should be top 10. You know, but the way the other teams climbed UCF and jumped them,
right,
to me was the bigger issue. I think 10, maybe 9. Even if they moved up one spot, I would have been fine with that. But it's the way the other teams moved ahead is what bothered me.
On our playback, we assumed that obviously we knew about the bias, but we didn't know about the jump that much of, you know, all that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
we honestly said in the playback right after the game on Sunday morning, we thought you guys would be coming in here at number 7, and that's where we were legitimately not being, obviously. We don't follow the program or fans or anything, but we legitimately were being objective and said we thought you guys would be number 7. And I guess we underestimated the bias, but hey, it is what it is. And I think
I think right now it's still early. I mean, I think UCF is heavily favored in this game against ECU, but I think ECU is going to give them their best shot, like just like any team should and will against. In these final 5 or 6 games, they still got a long way to go. But right now it's pretty obvious. I don't know if they've reached the ceiling in the rankings, but it's getting there.
It's probably making the people that love the bias, it's probably making them nervous, because if they don't do the right thing, I literally hate to use the term, but all hell's going to break loose. I think
it absolutely is. I mean, you look at, I mean, you know, if you go on Twitter, the powers that be are definitely taking it personally. I mean, you look at, I think some college football analyst said, just look at how UCF barely went by and beat Memphis, a bad Memphis team, and barely that. And the only Power 5 opponent they faced was Pitt. So I don't see how they could impress the college football committee for the rest of the season. And then fans in the responses were asking, Georgia hasn't beaten anyone with a winning record, and she wouldn't answer that. She wouldn't talk about that. So there's definitely people who are getting anxious, because at the end of the day, if UCF does, you know, shake up some things, their personal agenda gets messed up, and it hurts their jobs and it hurts them personally, which is just outrageous to me, because it says on the college football playoff website, every team has an equal chance. And right now, that's just not true. Because if it was true, UCF would have a chance. And right now, I mean, you look at ESPN stats and stuff, I think UCF has a 0.2% chance, even if they went out. And that to me is just insane.
Yeah, and what they don't understand is that you take a UCF, and when I say underdog, I don't mean like that you guys have no chance, but –
sure.
One thing they don't want is what I call a non-brand name team to come in there, like a UCF that has done very well in recent years, and a quote non-power league. I hate that term, power league, anyway. But they come in there, and they were in college basketball. That's what makes the tournament great. If you look at other tournaments, that's what makes it great. What kind of great story would it be to have a UCF playing? Say hypothetically, UCF plays Alabama for the national championship. To have that would be a huge thing, for a shot in the arm, even bigger arm for college football.
No, absolutely. I think yesterday I saw if UCF, before the bowl season and the playoff season, if UCF wins all of their games over the 2 year span, they'd have 6 wins over current top 5, top 25 opponents. When USC did that, when they won all of their games back in the early 2000s, I think they won that streak. They won 10 games over top 25 ranked opponents. And if you're going to win 2 straight seasons with over 6 top 25 opponents, no matter how you look at that, that is impressive. And to me, that should be taken into account when looking at UCF.
Right.
And I think the brand name, I think people are just nervous and they don't like to see, you know, your traditional schools get replaced by a school like UCF. You know, it's the same issue Boise State had a decade ago. It's the same idea, you know.
As far as I want to get involved in the game, do you guys realize, I guess you do, that Holton Ahlers has been named our true freshman quarterback as the starter this week? And if so, how do the Knights prepare any differently for him?
You know, I don't think they prepare any differently. I think they'll respect a true freshman. I think ECU can definitely put up a fight. We asked Josh Heupel yesterday what he thinks of ECU, and he still thinks that they have some talent on the team, even though it is a true freshman quarterback. You know, I think, like I said before, I think ECU is going to put up a fight and give them their best shot. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's close early on, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think experience over inexperience will cause problems for the inexperienced freshman quarterback.
What so far, are there any, as far as offense and defense, I know we went over that in the preview, are there
sure.
any things that have surprised you, different, I guess, themes or storylines for UCF that you, for the Knights, that you would not have expected?
I wouldn't have expected the defense to have done so well, especially Richie Grant. I think Richie Grant is top 10 in the country in interceptions, and I think yesterday he was a mid-season All-America by a media outlet. I don't remember which media outlet it was, but it was a legitimate media outlet, and he was a mid-season All-American. I mean, he's a good player, but I would not have expected his numbers that he has so far this season. I think he has 4 interceptions through 6 games. And then on offense, I would say I didn't expect Michael Kaluuya-Adley to be as important. He's the 6-year senior at tight end, and he's just really just, I mean, reliable is him. I mean, he's, when the offense is struggling, you looked at Memphis, at the Memphis game, you know, they had the fourth and one call that broke free for a touchdown from Taj McGown. But when they go down and drive that leads to the Mackenzie Milton touchdown, there's a few passes to Michael Kaluuya-Adley on that drive. I mean, he's the most experienced player on that team. He's been there for the past 6 years, so he's seen it all at UCF. And his production rate, I mean, his 6th year is just absolutely insane. You know, I know he's a 6-year senior, like I've been saying, but I would not expect him to be such an important role in the offense. I mean, he's just, when you need a first down, he's going to be, it's third and five, third and six, they're probably going to pass it to him just because you know he's going to catch the ball. He's going to make the play. He's going to be there for Mackenzie Milton. Even though they have the talented wide receivers in Trey Nixon and Gabe Davis, Michael Kaluuya-Adley is so reliable for the team and the offense.
It's going to be an interesting game. In fact, a huge game on ESPN2, and, of course, you can hear it on radio and tune in and like as well. Jason, I want to give folks, before we let you go, how can get folks get in contact with you, like social media, and obviously want to give a plug for the site. Love your site for 24/7 Knights.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter, at TheRealBD. My last name is spelled B-E-E-D-E. At Twitter, at Knights247 is our site. Knights247.com for all the latest recruiting and UCF news.
All right, Jason, good luck to the Knights this week, and we'll be a good host, and hopefully we have a good game, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Yeah, should be a good one. Thanks for having me on.
We had a chance to talk to Scotty Montgomery at Hyde Field, and he was talking to the media. Pirates hosting UCF, number 9 UCF, in the coaches poll, number 10 in the AP poll this week. It's going to be on ESPNU on Saturday night at 7 o'clock, and of course on the Pirate IMG Sports Radio Network with Jeff Charles and company. Let's go to Scotty Montgomery at Hyde Field right now.
It was pretty good. I thought that offensively we did some really, really good things. We probably had one of our more productive red zone bids with Holton in there today. He gave us some flexibility that we really needed to see. I thought defensively we created 2 turnovers, which we had a lot of conversation about. And I think that they were really generated by the pressure that we created. So that was a positive. Those 2 things were positive. There's a lot of things that happened before the red zone. A lot of things that happened before the turnover that we still got to get through.
You're concerned how Holton handled the week. How did he handle day 1?
He was really good today. It's more than just, coming to practice and in the meeting room. You still, when you're a young guy, you got to adjust to what goes on in the locker room. And that's kind of the whole package right there. I think he's handled the locker room well. They really rallied around him today. For a lot of reasons, our defense, they really rallied around him because they remember him. In training camp, just running the ball, the physicality, and defensive players always will identify with the physical nature of an offensive player. So he's getting a lot of love right now. We still got a long way to go. He's just a very unique and detailed leader. Naturally, I think that he would be greater than a lot of things.
Scotty, what about the time it takes outside the practice field? How much time is Holt spending in the film room, and how's his development going there?
It's a lot. The biggest thing is now, too, is, he's a true freshman in college. And a lot of people don't understand these are student athletes. So he's spending a lot of time on his schoolwork because he's such a great student, and he's spending, a ridiculous amount of time over here. The challenge is, sometimes for coaches, for a guy that wants, to soak up some of his knowledge, is that we're in meetings too. I'm in those meetings too, but he needs his individual time. So he's over here, a couple of hours extra about every day.
Is Stone able to practice today? And what's his
name? No, he didn't practice. I really, don't know, where he is. We'll know a little bit more probably tomorrow morning and exactly where it is. A few more deals going on. We practiced a host of guys there to make sure that we were ready at that position.
What concerned you most about UCF when you see them on tape?
Well, speed in the secondary. They're really talented in the secondary. They got a tremendous amount of speed. Looking at their, at their defense. The other part of it is, the unknown because of Holton. There will be an effect. They're going to have to adjust what they've done. And there's things that they don't know about us, but you like to see stuff on tape a lot so that you can game plan off of it.
Sometimes when big wins or upsets happen in college football, coaches talk about the anatomy of an upset or what it takes. What do you think, what does it take this Saturday to knock them off, or what are some key factors?
We really can't give up the X plays on first down. I think if we can limit them in their X plays on first down, we'll have a really, really good chance.
Thanks, Coach.
Next up in our practice report is Scotto Hyde Field and talk to number 11, the wide receiver standout, as a matter of fact, Blake Prohl. And let's go to Blake right now.
Here now with Blake Prohl, and right after practice here Tuesday. How you feeling, Blake, about your chances against UCF?
I feel good about it, man. We wouldn't want to be in a better position. Going into top 10 team, how could you not turn the season around right now? It's a great opportunity for us, and to do it in front of our hometown, too, would be great.
I know there's a lot of upside with you. I know a lot of people between the fans and the media with you running your routes. How do you feel so far about the season as far as your individual play?
I had a lot of expectations coming in this year, but, God's got a plan for me. I always come out really confident saying, because I got a lot of confidence in my ability, but I do realize that it's really a team effort, and college football is different. So I got to rise to the occasion and just get better every day.
Looking with Holton this week, starting the new practice, being the number 1 quarterback, how do you feel about with him playing this week?
I feel great about it. He's a competitor. He's a winner. He's a leader. He's always, when we were down last week and the week before, he's the one of the loudest ones on the sideline, even if he's not starting. So we're just excited to see what he can do.
As far as you and other guys do you have to run different routes or get open, or what do you have to do for as far as wide receivers to make him successful this week?
Honestly, we make the quarterbacks look good, but the quarterbacks also make us look good. So it's a team effort, and he's really good at scrambling. So, routes are routes until he scrambles out of the pocket. Then it's a free-for-all, and he's really good at making plays happen outside of the pocket. So,
What's the keys to victory this week to beat a top-10 program like UCF? Home crowd, that helps, but what else do you guys have to do on the field?
Just staying physical and confident. We know they're going to come in here with a lot of confidence. They're on a long win streak, have been for 2 years now. So we just got to make sure we come out and play physical and match their intensity.
Good luck to you, Blake. I know it's going to be an exciting game, and it'll be interesting to see what happens against UCF.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
One of my favorite times was, of course, the 1990s. That's when I went to college. It was outstanding. Next, the guy, the running backs coach for East Carolina with the class of 1993, played for Coach Logan. Let's go to Jason Nichols right now.
Right now with Coach Jason Nichols, appreciate you so much. I know that you guys are just done with practice. How did it go today?
We're good. Had a lot of intensity out here on the field. Tuesdays are always a pretty busy day for the kids because we got a lot of install going in, but they came out here and flew around the day and practiced hard.
You and I went to school at the same time, so I'm glad to have you on the staff. And we're a kid from the 90s for sure. The last time, thanks to Tom McClellan, the last time a true freshman quarterback played was actually in your class with Perez Madison. How does that feel to have now, 25 years later, you have Holt Nahlers?
I guess they always say history has a way of repeating itself, right? So we got a good one in Holt. He had a good day out here on the practice field. We're excited about him, and I'm sure he's excited about his opportunity.
Wanted to ask you, one of the things that myself, the media, fans have said with Holton in, it helps you with the running backs, being running backs coach, and the running game is something that's important to me and a lot of folks. How do you feel about the running game this week?
Yeah, I feel good about it. We got to be able to run the ball and be effective so we don't put as much pressure on the passing game, and that's one thing definitely that Holton brings to the table that helps us out as an offense to be able to get the running game going a little bit. They have to account for him, so they can't just load the box up. So he definitely will help us out in the run game.
Wanted to ask you about as far as the running back position. You've got a lot of talent, four great guys. I mean, you've got to be happy with what you have in the stable.
We do. We got four guys that work hard, and that's the biggest key to it. And they compete every day out here in practice. So I've been very proud of those guys and how they've approached practice. And we just got to continue to work.
That's what I was going to say. It's like with a season or certainly with a football, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right?
No doubt. And that's what I told those guys at the beginning of the year. We're going to need them all to be successful. And we still got a lot of football ahead of us. And we're excited about the opportunity on Saturday.
Coach, good luck to you. I know you're working really hard. You got a lot on you right now. Thanks for taking the time with us.
All right. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
One of the keys of victory for the Pirates on Saturday night against UCF is, of course, the running game. And that was Jake Nick is awesome as the running backs coach. We had a chance to sit down and talk to Anthony Scott, senior running back. And let's talk to him right now.
Being a senior, I know with the adversity you've had, followed you for your whole career out of the Tidewater area. You've been working hard, I know. What do you bring to the table as far as the rest of the guys, as far as leadership?
I try to do a lot of things, lead by example. That's a big thing I've been growing up with. Because a lot of people, they can talk, but then when they watch you, you don't see them really doing nothing. Then they ain't really listening to you. You're just going through one after the other. So really leading by example is really big for me.
What about the running game? You're so fast, and you can definitely a playmaker. What do you guys have to do to beat UCF this week?
We just got to just do our job. No MAs. Execute our job. Execute it to the best of our ability.
Well, certainly good luck to you. I know you got a class. We'll let you get changed and get to class, and good luck this week against UCF.
Thank you.
Tony Peterson talked to the media this week at practice on Tuesday at Hyde Field right after practice about true freshman Holton Nahlers getting his first start, and here he is talking about Holton at the start against UCF this week.
Play great, you know what, but he's still a true freshman. He's going to have his ups and his downs. We just got to make sure that we control the bad plays. The bad plays aren't turnovers. Bad plays might be, a throwaway. Maybe I get a yard, I lose a yard right there. Control the bad plays with a young quarterback and let him go out and play his game.
Have you had a true freshman quarterback before at any other stops?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember at Marshall, I had Rakeem Cato. He weighed 165 pounds, and we went to West Virginia and played. So I've had plenty of true freshmen, and they usually act like true freshmen. They're going to have good. They're going to have bad. And you just got to kind of control them with the plays. You allow them to run, but you also got to really lock them in during the week in practice, and that's our job to do, to make sure that they understand, you know, how bad a bad play is. Like, a bad play can't be a turnover.
What makes this freshman a little bit different?
You know what? I mean, Holden's just naturally he's that guy, the leader, the dude. He's always been that guy, especially in this town. He brings that to the table, which is great. Plus, he's a grown-ass man. I mean, he's a big 6'4", 235-pound, tough-to-tackle guy. So you can do a lot more with him, and you can be a lot safer with him because of his legs, but they still got to respect him throwing the football.
Tony, if you didn't have as much success with those last two drives in the Houston game, would y'all be making this decision, or was that really kind of a tipping point?
You know what, at the end of the day, the quarterback position ultimately comes down to the head coach. You know, we've had a lot of discussions on it. It's probably a better question for him. I would probably say we would still be going in that direction and giving that a try this week, with not on how well he played on those second two drives, but just how the quarterback position played prior to that.
Even regardless of who's at quarterback, I know there were a few plays, O-line didn't hold up, receivers missing blocks. Is that kind of – they still have to make those plays regardless of who's at quarterback next year?
They do. You know, I talk to the quarterbacks about your bad plays. What are your 5 to 7 bad plays out there? Two of Reed's were turnovers that at the end of the day, he could have done a little better job, but we had number 10 turn scot-free on him in his face. And that's not fair to the kid, but it still happened, and that's the way it goes. So we got to clean it up everywhere. And for us to be successful, we can't turn people free on our quarterback. We have to make plays. Our first 5 to 7 plays, we had a bunch of mental errors all over the place, and it's not just the quarterback. But usually when you do well, the quarterback gets too much credit. When you do bad, he gets too much blame, just kind of like head coaches and coordinators, and that's just life.
What spell was he out today? Was it center, or where are you at, kind of at the center position?
Yep, Peyton's our backup center, so he's in there right now. You know, he's young. He's a freshman. So we're young, you know. I mean, we need to get old and stay old, you know. That's one of those old sayings. But we're not right now, and that's what we've got, and he'll do a good job, and we just got to get him ready to go this week.
I asked Scotty this yesterday, but about how long of a leash that Holt would have. In an ideal situation, would you like to see him play the whole game this Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him play the whole game. Obviously, that depends on how good or bad whatever happens right there. As long as he's taking care of the football and he's making good decisions, I would anticipate him playing the whole game. I don't think anything will change there.
The other side is Reed. You know, he started the first half of the year. How has he handled kind of maybe being told, hey, Holden's getting shot?
You know what? He's handled it like any 20-year-old kid would handle it. He ain't fired up about it. I wouldn't be when I played. But I remember my junior year, I was not chosen as a starting quarterback, and 2 games into it, a guy dinged his knee a little bit, and I took over, and I got the job for the next 2 years and had a great career. And I told him, I said, you're still one snap away from being the starting quarterback again, and you have to approach it that way. Now, it's going to take a few days to kind of get it out. You know, kids are kids. I mean, crap, they want to be in there. They want to be the guy, and that doesn't feel good when all of a sudden it's taken away from you. So he'll be fine, and he'll get through it, and he's a great kid.
When it comes to the game itself, I think there's a chance that if you've got to, for one thing, you've got to definitely shorten the game. You've got to be able to run the football. I do think that's one positive that I can put in the game for the game, is that Holden will be able to help us with the running game. The kicker for the whole thing for me, though, is, and I'm going to say this to the coaching staff, stop abandoning the run. You get down 2 scores and you're abandoning the run. Like, it's like they panic. They panic, and it makes the kids panic, I think. I think they need to establish the running game and be stubborn, and that's how you're going to – if you do pass happy, then we'll lose, you know, 63-6, no doubt about it. We'll get.
Yeah, started. I mean, but I guess I agree with you, and we talked, you know, yesterday, I think, about, you know, we were 21-6 in the third quarter, and we were not out of that game.
No.
And, you know, we just abandoned the run, you know, against Houston. And, you know, we had 13 yards rushing in the third quarter. I mean, you know, 4.5 yards rushing per quarter is not going to get it done. Or 4 and a third yards rushing, I guess you'd say. But, you know, you're exactly right. You've got to get this run game going. But at the same time, now you've got, you know, you've got a – now, granted, the kid who's, you know, playing right guard now and actually, you know, playing pretty well, has stepped up and filled the role pretty well. But, you know, now you've got, you know, John Spellacy's out this week. he's got an injury, so he's not going to be playing. So now, you know, you've arguably got, you know, I don't know if you could argue Spellacy or McGinn's our best lineman, but, you know, certainly one of our best line players. Now you're going to have a, you know, Winstead will be stepping in. Now you got a true freshman, happen to a true freshman, and now you're going to have to, on top of that, you're going to have to, you know, establish a run game. I mean, it's just, I wouldn't say that it looks promising. I agree with what you're saying, but, you know, I think everybody, you know, focuses on UCF's offense. I mean, I was talking to Kyle last night. I think what UCF's averaging close to 50 points a game and only giving up about 17.
Yeah, they're averaging, John, I think it was 44.5 points or something like that. And then, like you said, they're giving up 19.5. And to touch on the point as far as establishing the running game and shortening the ball game, and obviously there, you can also use that ball control passing game as well. But just as far as running the football, UCF's opponents are averaging a little over 198 yards per game on the ground, 4.4 yards per carry. So maybe we can have some success on the ground and shorten things and stay in the ball game Saturday night.
Hey, guys, change the subject just for a second. We'll get back to UCF. I wanted to make sure I was speaking correctly on Rich Rodriguez. Rich Rodriguez, the allegations by his former administrative assistant were eventually dropped, and she never filed suit. So basically, she made allegations, got him fired, then didn't file a lawsuit. That's what happened with Rich Rod. Now back to UCF.
Like I said, just establishing the run, just looking at their numbers, and now And the thing about it is, it's not like they haven't played a Navy or someone like that, or a Georgia Tech or someone that typically runs for 350 yards. You don't have a game like that to distort the statistics, so to speak. But then, I was going to say, just a little bit, guys, about the series as a whole. This is a series that the Pirates lead 10-6, but UCF has won 4 out of the last 5 and 5 out of the last 7. And some of the most lopsided games on both sides have come in the last 3 years. That's when in 2015, when UCF went winless, we of course beat them 44-7 down there in Orlando, and that was the most lopsided victory the Pirates have had in the series. And then last year, we of course got hammered down in Orlando, 63-21, and that was the most lopsided win for the Knights. And the series dates back to 1991. We actually played at UCF when they were 1AA, as it was at the time. And that was the game 3 of that 91 season. We won 47-25.
Yeah, played them in the Citrus Bowl, correct? Didn't we?
Yes. I think it was something that we did for recruiting purposes. Of course, yeah. You don't typically go to play at a 1AA team,
yeah.
FCS team as it is now.
Yeah. You typically don't play an FCS team at the Citrus Bowl either. So it was an interesting situation. But my thoughts on the UCF game is pretty simple to me. I think it's going to take a lot of turnovers and dumb luck. Chance of rain Saturday night. Keep that in mind, guys. Chance of rain Saturday night. I've been saying all year with the way this defense is played, that it's just inevitable. We haven't had enough turnovers forced. At some point in this season, this David Blackwell defense will force a bunch of turnovers in a game. If we're going to pull the upset, and I do not think it's going to happen, but if we are, take into account that it's going to be raining. Take into account the way this defense flies through the ball. Maybe we force a bunch of turnovers. Maybe Holton Ahlers in the rain, big physical kid.
James Summers.
Runs wild like James Summers did over Virginia Tech a few years ago. And that would be the chance we would have to pull this game out. What's most likely going to happen is they're gonna take the run game away, fix it with a banged up offensive line, and make whole teams throwing. UCF secondary is probably the strength of their defense. So I think we're going to have trouble scoring. Defensively, I think we'll play well, but eventually get worn out. And DF will end up pulling away
third, fourth quarter.
Midway, third quarter. Yep.
I mean, they're just so dynamic. I mean, they can beat you so many ways. I mean, you know, Milton can throw the ball. He can run the ball.
Oh, sure.
I mean,
yeah. Great running back. I mean, they're averaging, I mean, God, they're averaging, I mean, some absurd, they're rush, average about 6 yards a rush. I mean, because they can just, I mean, they're almost impossible to defend. They play crazy up-tempo. I mean, they are, I haven't watched, you know, many, I watched the UConn game because I think it's the first game of the season, you know, thank God college football on Thursday. I'm like, man, UCF hasn't missed a step.
You know, what's funny is the scary thing is, guys, with Josh Heupel, you know, whenever there's a coaching change, you always hear about, well, there's going to be some problems. There's going to be, and you know what's happened? They're actually better with Josh Heupel than Scott Frost.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, they are.
They played nobody. I mean, they played UConn, South Carolina State, is Florida Atlantic, who, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, Lane Kiffin, you know, but they're not all that great here. They played Pittsburgh, who sucks.
John, just to expand on your point, they opened the season at UConn on, I think it was a Thursday night game, 56-17 winners, beat South Carolina State 38-0, FAU 56-36, beat Pitt 45-14, beat SMU 48-20. And then had the come from behind win on Saturday over Memphis 31-30. And like Dave started to say, they had the game at North Carolina that was canceled due to Hurricane Florence.
Yeah, I don't think they're nowhere near as good as they were last year.
But one area that they are certainly improved, just based on the numbers, is defensively. They have Randy Shannon as the new defensive coordinator, of course, well known for what he did as a player and as a coach with the Miami Hurricanes.
I think one thing, you know, Kyle was mentioning the rain. I mean, that was a big factor in the Memphis game when I was reading the recap, is that, you know, it was raining during the Memphis game, which seemed to slow down the UCF offense a good bit.
Right. And another thing, too, is I want to make a point that, going back to you, Kyle, is if – not that we want this to happen, but if Holton has a tough game, then I want every fan to stand by your man. You wanted Holton Ahlers. We're getting Holton Ahlers. I'm okay with that. I'm not saying I'm not. I'm just saying, don't turn on him the way you did Reed.
Oh, they're not going to turn on Holton. That's one good thing. I do think about starting Holton. They're not going to turn on Holton. This will be the few people who still think Mo, a lot of the people who still think Mo has a chance, are huge Holton Ahlers fans also. They're not going to turn on Holton. They're going to turn on Mo. So that's the one good thing. And if Holton struggles, God knows, I hope he doesn't. But I think if Holton doesn't get it done, even not this week, but over the next few weeks, I think everybody will put the blame on Coach Montgomery at that point.
Yeah.
Which is where it belongs, by the way.
You can't say that everybody – I still go back to you. You can't say that you have three good quarterbacks and you act like that with Herring, Effetti, and Ahlers. All three of them are talented quarterbacks. And you can't say that we don't have talent anymore. You can't say, you look at running back, you probably could make an argument that we don't have enough as far as depth, especially defensive line. You can argue with – you can make a good argument there. And certainly we can – John and I talked yesterday. You look at the – we've always struggled as long as I can remember. And that was one of the criticisms I've said publicly about Ruff. Our offensive line has just not been where it needs to be at our university. Not that, and let me be fair, anybody that knows anything about football knows that offensive linemen are not growing on trees, especially the kind that we need in today's football games, in today's game, they have to be more athletic. You can't get a dude that's 300 pounds and throw him out there and expect him to do well. So I think when you're looking at things right now, I think you're looking at with the situation we've got going on. Ehlers, if he pulls off a miracle and wins, I think you put a stadium, you put a statue out in the stadium, in front of the stadium, because that's a huge feat. And if there's ever a time that we've needed a win, I mean, can you imagine? I just want to know. I have one question I've been wanting to wait for this whole podcast. I'm going to ask it now. Kyle, if we beat UCF, will you rush the field and tear down the goalpost?
Well, I'm sure they'll have them lowered. But if we beat UCF, look, I'm debating on whether I'm going or not, to be honest with you. This would be the first game I've missed all year. If I'm there, if we beat UCF, I'm not tearing down any goalposts. But yeah, I'm rushing the field.
You are?
Yeah. I'm rushing the field. Yeah. I'm going out there with the students. Yes, aren't you, David?
I've never done it before. It'd be a first.
Oh, I did it when we beat West Virginia. Thank God none of the cops beat me.
What about you, Dr. Bream? Will you be there?
I actually am not going to be there this week. I was at the Houston game. We've had a boys' weekend planned, you know, before the schedule came out, and so I'm actually just going to watch this one on TV. Unfortunately, I'll miss many games, but I figure it's like, I'll give me chances to do, hang out with the friends, group from high school. We've been friends for 20 years, and these opportunities don't come around very often. And the UCU football, we'll be there. And I do truly believe not in this state forever.
Let's hope not. I can tell you one man that will definitely be there. Mr. Bubba, I'm always there, Rosenbaum.
Maybe not. It has nothing to do with It has nothing to do with the way things are going. But my son's playing 7U travel baseball, and so the schedule will come out tomorrow, and depending on when his games are on Saturday. If 2 weeks ago he played at 9 and 10:30, so we were done by noon, I'll definitely be there. If he has a game at 3:30, where he's not going to be done till 4:30, 5 o'clock, no way I can make it. But as long as he's done by 2:30, 3 o'clock, I'll definitely be in Dowdy Ficklin on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think the fans will instead of blaming Holton, I don't think they would blame Holton. I think if at this point the way fan base feels about Ehlers, I think that the blame would go solely on Montgomery. I think the fans would turn even more on Montgomery, and he would get all the blame, which is where the blame truly lies, is with the head coach. John, Bubba?
I definitely think you're right there. I mean, the fans have kind of spoken that they want Ehlers, and, I'm not going to really comment here or there. I don't, whoever gets the best chance to win should be the starting quarterback. I mean, I think we all can, pretty much agree on that. But, I think I would just like to make a point that, I hope Ehlers does well, but I think Mo mismanaged the situation. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I think that Holton should be redshirted. I think if we were thinking in the long-term interest of the program, we would be redshirting Holton Ehlers. And, is this an act of desperation for Mo to keep his job? I mean, I don't know, but we were talking about earlier, we've got the O-line holes. We've got a good defense coming to town. We're going to have a freshman center starting as well. I mean, this is, what could go wrong? You don't want to, everything I've heard, Holton's a great kid. He's a confident kid. He, holds himself with swagger. I don't think if he had a bad start, based on what I've heard, it probably wouldn't, get him down. But, I think you want to put him in a better position to be successful. And, to that end, I really don't think that the offensive staff put Reed in a position this year to be successful at all. And I think that's kind of the travesty of this situation. Scotty comes out and says that, Holton has no lease while Reed Herring is on a freaking choker all season. Maybe Reed's not throwing off, you know, not stepping into his throws or whatever. But, I mean, they want to. Dude's in my face. They got to get rid of the ball. I mean, I don't really know what they what you want Reed to do. I mean, you know, he's got no time to throw. He's got no running game. You know, they're trying to get him to run the read pass option when he's not a read pass option quarterback. And, I mean, just the staff, you know, they get paid to make the players successful as possible. And, I mean, we've had offensive regression this year. And that's, you know, Reed's talented. I mean, Reed is a highly recruited quarterback. Ifedi was a highly recruited quarterback. Ehlers was a highly recruited quarterback. And, I mean, we've really shown we can't develop these kids.
And that's what it comes down to is I think that if you look at me, like, for my criticisms from day one under Montgomery, the number one thing for me right now is simply player development. It still comes back to player development. We don't have, even though I think Holton's a four-star, and because he chose East Carolina, they dropped him down to a three.
You don't get the offers Holton got unless you're a four- or five-star player.
Yeah, he's the real deal. And I think that Holton, I think that Kingsley, and I think Reed are three great quarterbacks. I really do. And I think that if you had the right, and I hope they'll all stay after this year, and if you have the right quarterback coach and the right head coach and offensive coordinator, I think that you would be wowed by all three of them. I really do. I really, really do. I think player development is the one thing that's going to bring Montgomery down. I really do. I know we've lost it, but it starts with player development.
It's not the one thing. That is one of the things. You're absolutely right. He's terrible at player development, but it's not just player development. He's not a good offensive mind. You just look at Minshew. Minshew has clearly developed as a quarterback.
Right.
Look at his numbers at Washington State. Yet when he was here playing under Montgomery, everybody thought he was garbage. Well, Minshew wasn't garbage. The offense he was running was garbage.
And you have Mike Leach. That's a quarterback whisperer. That's the only way I know how to describe him. The dude is is well known. By the way, guys, that's another guy that people have mentioned. But when Ruffin got hired, he was Leach was one that, if you remember all that stuff that went on at Texas Tech and he was fired, there were some people, there was a small percentage, I don't think it was a huge percentage, that wanted Mike Leach.
He wasn't going to come here. Talk about somebody who got fired for an asinine reason. What happened to Mike Leach at Texas Tech is just ridiculous. And thankfully, Mike landed on his feet. He's at Washington State now.
Yeah, but if we're looking at, you know, player development, you know, I think, you know we have, you know, all the reasons out there people have trotted out. But, I mean, you know, if we look at the people who have been starting, you know, Herring, Ruffin recruit, Anthony Scott, you know, Ruffin recruit, Trayvon Brown, Ruffin recruit, Terrell Green, Ruffin recruit, DeAndre Ferrier, you know, Holton recruit, Ruffin recruit, Cortez Heron, Ruffin recruit, Garrett McGinn, Ruffin recruit. If we look, and then you start looking on the defense, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong on any of these, but I don't think so. Harvey, Ruffin recruit, Jalen Price, Ruffin recruit, Sean James, Ruffin recruit, Ray Tillman, Ruffin recruit, Colby Gore, Ruffin recruit, Devon Sutton, Ruffin recruit, Corey Sargent, Ruffin recruit.
And Corey Sargent is also a Ruffin recruit.
For somebody who swung and missed on recruits, we're still starting a lot of Ruffin McNeil's players.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I'm not going to use that against you, John. Look, my players still weren't ready yet. They're still in development. I'm still having to play Ruffin's players.
Right, it's year three. I mean, it's year three. That's my thing.
Exactly. You're 100% right.
When you sign on the dotted line and you do that press conference,
they're all your players.
They're your damn players.
Yeah, your first job. Your first.
They're your damn players.
Yeah. Your first recruiting job when you get hired as a head coach is to recruit the players that are already on this campus to be your player. Before you recruit any kid at any high school or any kid in your college, you recruit the kids that are on the campus to play for you. You win them all over again. That's what your mindset should be, is to go recruit that locker room and get all those boys to play for you. And if you are too arrogant or too stupid to do that, You have no business being a Division I head coach.
Let me ask you this, guys. Let's talk about the game because we've got a few minutes left. What do you like about I'm going to start with Dr. Bream. Are you going to give ECU any kind of chance? Are you going on a limb tonight?
No.
So you're going – what's your prediction for the game?
Score. UCF's got to win big. I mean, they are probably very pissed off that they beat Memphis on the road and didn't move in the polls. And, they won't end the playoff this year, so they've got to – you know, they've got to stomp teams that are 2-4. So I'm going to go 63-21.
63,
wow. That's the score from last year's game.
Yep. Yeah, Bubba, I think it's about the same as last year.
What do you think, Bubba?
Most people, and I definitely think UCF's going to win the ball game. I don't think it's going to be that lopsided. I have confidence in David Blackwell in the defense, even if we do give up a touchdown or two that are non-defensive or non-offensive touchdowns, I should say. I think I could see something like 41-13, 41-17, some of those lines. Because you look at it, obviously, we talked about UCF's defense being better. It's going to be Holton's first start. And think about it, guys. In that first game against USF, first game in league play, that is, we went down and scored on the game's opening drive, and then we did not score a touchdown in conference play until those two Holton
led drives. Yeah, we went 7.5 quarters without scoring a touchdown.
And then conference play, we went 10.5 quarters or whatever without scoring a touchdown.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, I'm going to give my prediction right now. I am going, Bubba and I were reading the same score. I do like UCF to win it. I've been going back and forth, but I'm going to 41 UCF, and I think that we score more points. I'm going to go 41-24 as the first thing that's what's in my gut feeling. So I'm going to go with my gut. 41 UCF, 24 like Holton. I think they'll score not a lot, not more as far as like a way much more, but I think 24 will be what I'm going with. 41-24, but they do score some more points and in non-garbage time. And
Bubba, what was your score again?
I said 41-17.
You saw my score, so I'm going to have to change it. I'm going to go UCF 45, East Carolina 20.
All right, so we got the predictions, and we'll see what comes true. We're going to end this train wreck. It's been a tough night at the office for our podcast. Thank you, Dr. Bream. We'll have you back on a better night, I promise, my friend. And hope you have fun at the boys' night. We'll see if we can get a victory. For Dr. Bream, Kyle from LaGrange Barber, and Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.